Hello, and we're back with CFMU Unusual Sources. Today we have a really exciting interview about the American healthcare debate. We've seen in recent weeks this increased acrimonious sort of demonstrations and atmosphere in the United States regarding healthcare. The rhetoric has included claims that Obama was creating death panels to euthanize the sick. But are Obama's reforms really even that radical? And are they actually going to change anything? Today we have Dr. John Walsh with us. He is a professor of physiology at the University of Massachusetts. He is a regular contributor to Counterpunch and a healthcare advocate. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you great.
Great.
The healthcare reforms that have been advocated by Obama include this public option. Can you explain how this differs from the single-payer program that we have in Canada?
Well, to begin with, no one can really tell you what the Obama plan is, because nobody knows yet. But it is quite different from the wonderful healthcare system you have in Canada. Essentially, I should start at the beginning here. That when Obama was working his way up in Chicago, he appealed to many single payer activists and said he was in favor of it. He made a famous speech in 2003 to the Illinois AFL-CIO in which, or maybe I should say infamous speech, in which he said that he favored single-payer. It was the best solution to, that is, your program, like your Medicare program. It was the best solution to our health care problems, and that we needed three things to get that. He said we needed a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic President. We now have all those things. And the first thing Obama said when he was elected and took up health care reform was single payer, a system like yours, is off the table.
Yes. In fact, during
he used that actually to rise to power. He not only won a lot of support for that, he raised a lot of money with that promise, but as soon as he became a presidential candidate, he immediately backed off it, and we're left with something that we really don't know what it is, but it could be anything. The public option is could be potentially it could be a program with a very scaled-down type of medical care with lower benefits, and it would be, used because we really don't know what it is, as a dumping ground for those who were unprofitable to insure and not very wealthy or powerful. So how many of the 40 to 60 million Americans we have uninsured would be dumped into that pool, and what the benefits in that pool would be like, we have no idea of.
Yes, it seems that no one really knows what the plan is. There seem to be numerous bills. I find it interesting that you mentioned when Obama was in Chicago. I know that his personal physician was Dr. Quintin Yun, I believe, who's the coordinator of a group that you're involved with, the Physicians for a National Health Program. Can you sort of describe this very fast transition? Do you understand why? Is there any reasoning behind it?
The Quintin Yun, since then, recently, I guess a few months back on Democracy Now, made quite a criticism of Obama and said that he was very disappointed in how Obama had turned out. So, yes, Quintin Yun is the National Coordinator for Physicians for a National Health Program, which that's PNHP.org, that I'm a member of and have been for a long while. And, we've been working for single payer, for a Canadian-like program, since the middle 80s in the United States, and sentiment has grown for it. if you do polls and you explain it clearly, the American people favor single payer, and you can tell them it's tax-based, so they know they're going to pay taxes by a large majority. So it's popular with the voters, but it is not popular, obviously, with the insurers who would be driven out of business. They seem to think that they can contend with a public option, whatever that will be. They'd rather have no public option, and so we're stuck with that. I think the one of the problems here is that the moral dimension of all this is has not been emphasized by the Obama administration either. You know, for the wealthiest country in the world to be unable to provide the kind of health care that Canada or France, for example, do, or the UK, is a bit shocking. And so that moral dimension of making sure that everybody is taken care of, and the moral and the political dimension of having somebody in the same program instead of having some people in this, some people in the other, some people under Medicaid, some people under Medicare, some people under the public option, that's a politically it makes the program very weak. It leaves it open to these various programs to divide and conquer tactics. And so, from our point of view, it's neither morally justifiable, nor is it politically wise. So we and many, many people are quite unhappy with what Obama has done here.
Yes, and you've mentioned some of the players, and there are many others that are vocally for the single payer. Can you describe how the White House has shut these people out?
Well, the first public forum on that the president had on health care, the senior black member of Congress, John Conyers, when that was announced, he approached Obama, and at the White House, actually, at a gathering of the Congressional Black Caucus, and said, "Well, I have a single payer bill before Congress. I've been working on this for a long time. I supported you a lot. I would like to come to that meeting, that forum, along with the insurance companies." And Obama wrote back to him by email, "Nothing doing. We don't want you there." And then our group and another group called SinglePayerAction.org got together and said we would have a demonstration outside the White House with doctors in white coats and others, and if we didn't have a representative inside. And so upon hearing that, Obama relented, but the people once inside were put in a position where they couldn't say anything. That was John Conyers and the president of our New York chapter of Physicians for National Health Program.
Yes,
unwisely, I think they did not disrupt that meeting, but they did not. And so that was the beginning of the healthcare reform effort.
Yes, can you describe a little bit about John Conyers' bill? Because I believe it advocates for a single payer plan. How is this being received in Congress? And
well, let me see. The last time, so there are two Medicare for All bills in Congress, or single payer bills. John Conyers has one in the House, and that has, last time I looked, I think it had about 70 co-sponsors out of 400 some odd House members. There is also a single payer bill in the Senate, which has been put there by the only independent in the Senate, Bernie Sanders from Vermont. He calls himself a socialist, but he's a socialist, independent, whatever. He's put a single-payer bill before the Senate, and he doesn't have a single co-sponsor, including many people who claimed to get votes. I can think of Russ Feingold in Wisconsin as one, that said they were in favor of single payer, but they won't touch the bill. So there's a very I think we can see two things here. That number one, and I'm going to make a political point, our two-party system is not working It's really a one-party system. And the Democrats have been claiming that they would give us health care for all since the early 1950s. They've had over half a century to do it. They haven't done it and don't seem capable of it. And I think you saw in Canada that the breakthrough on single payer was not made by the two major parties, but by the NDP when it came to power in Saskatchewan.
Yes,
and
definitely.
It was a big
Tommy
fight.
Douglas.
And I cannot see, actually, this is very sad when I have to say this, that we will be able to do this in the United States without a movement of that sort. Because Obama, remember, was the candidate of the most liberal element of the Democratic Party. And he has been unwilling to cross the insurance industry, and he's been unwilling to deliver on what many thought would be a central promise of his administration.
Yes, you've mentioned some of these so-called liberal lawmakers and how they really don't want to touch the single-payer issue, specifically a lot of the senators. I know that you've been very involved with this fight. Can you describe how some of the senators and other lawmakers have reacted to you, maybe during demonstrations and whatnot?
Well, one, in Massachusetts, an erstwhile supporter of single payer was Senator Kennedy, who is, as you know, quite ill and probably at death's door. And the other senator is the former presidential candidate in 2004, John Kerry. And we have had a series of demonstrations at John Kerry's office. And this is quite surprising to us. Actually, we were confronted by an armed police force in uniform, and the Kerry office had called this police force, and it turned out it wasn't the Boston police, which we might have expected, although that wouldn't have been right either, but it was Homeland Security. So I was quite surprised that we now have armed national police, apparently in every state, Homeland Security, and one of the things they're going to do is to police and, in my estimation, and to try to intimidate people who are demonstrating for health care for all, which is kind of, which means they're equating health care advocates with terrorists.
Talk
and,
about an overreaction.
That was, to me, that was very surprising and very disturbing.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I think I might say another thing. In the United States, you know, there's a form of capital, if you will, that's called finance capital. It's just the part of the economy that manipulates money. The banks are, of course, the biggest representatives, but probably the second biggest is the insurance companies. And this sector of our society, which is a sector run by multi-billionaires, essentially, is now extremely powerful. And we can trace many of our problems to these, actually, increasingly, it's a small number of people with an awful lot of wealth and power. And they gave us this recession we're in, the banking sector did, and the insurance industry is giving us a healthcare system with skyrocketing costs and many, many uninsured or many, many more inadequately insured people. So it's all fine for them because the discrepancy between their wealth and the rest of the population is enormous and growing all the time, but for the rest of the country, this sector, I think, has emerged as, if I may say so, a real enemy to the people's quality of life.
Yes, and they are seem to be, the insurance companies seem to be very involved with the Obama health care reform. In fact, it seems that many of them are advocating it. I find it interesting that during the Clinton administration, when they were trying to pass health care reform, insurance companies were very much against this, and they launched an advertising campaign against it with the famous couple, I don't know if you've heard of them, probably have, Harry and Louise.
Absolutely.
And Harry and Louise now are back, but this time they're in support for the Obama health care reform. Can you tell us a little bit more about this involvement with the insurance lobby with this new health care plan?
Well, the insurance lobby this time has some ads that are in favor of the Obama plan, but they're still worried about single payer. And so there's a notorious ad, which has now been dissected a little bit, I think, of a Canadian woman who appears and says that she had a brain tumor.
Yes, she's actually from an area around where we live. So,
oh, she's
yes.
from Montreal.
Oh, there was another one near Waterdown that lives near Hamilton.
Oh, I see. So in any event, so I guess you know about this.
Yes.
And it turns out that was a complete lie. Actually, you know, for people who live in Ontario, I guess I'm not completely sure of this, but I know in Ontario the Canadian healthcare card it's a photo ID now.
Yes, it is.
And I don't know whether that's true nationally, but it didn't used to be a photo ID. It used to be just a card.
Yes, and some people still have those cards. If you were born with, you got them when you were born, and if you still have them, they're just a red and white card.
Yes, but the reason for the transformation was that in the early 90s, the Ontario government found that Americans were coming across the border using friends' cards or forging their own, and they were running up a health care bill for the Ontario government of almost $1 billion a year. I think it was 700 some odd million a year. And that wasn't for emergency care. That was because they couldn't get care in their own country, so they would cross the border. Now that, you know, sort of, we hear a lot about, like the woman in this ad who claimed she had to come to the United States, although she did not have to, if she even did. But the fact of the matter was that Ontario was facing a bankruptcy from travel going quite the other way. So that kind of ad is what we're seeing now, and I think it's very remarkable that they are still worried about a single payer. And I think you mentioned that at some of these town hall hearings, the insurers and some conservative groups actually,
yes,
one led by the former chief executive of Columbia Healthcare, which is a for-profit hospital chain, and they were fined, I don't know, untold millions for cheating the government and the public. They have been organizing these so-called grassroots disruptions at the healthcare forums, saying that this, you know, this is socialized medicine.
Don't forget the death panels that they've
now. And the death panels, that's right.
Sarah Palin, who's now.
So actually, I think it's interesting that the right wing is doing with a phony grassroots organization what the left wing has failed to do with a genuine grassroots organization. And as you look deeper into the problems we have in the United States, there is a passivity and a lack of militancy and boldness on the part of people who would like to change things for the better.
Yes, but...
And, you know, if you compare our society to a society like the French society with social benefits better even than Canada's, it is because, in my estimation, they have a more active population, a less accepting and passive population, and that is a deep problem in American culture. After all, when the 2000 election in the United States was clearly stolen because they just stopped the count, they didn't allow the votes to get counted, there were no protests in American streets. When the Iranian election was probably, apparently, I don't know, stolen, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands went out to protest. So who has the more vibrant democracy? You can tell me.
Yeah, but exactly. This sort of leads into my question, though, from former Clinton administration Secretary of Labor Robert Reich, is saying maybe why the insurance companies are so scared, and he's a supporter of single-payer system, is that if there's this public option, it would be so large that it could actually negotiate low drug prices and low premiums, and this will cause private insurers to either reform or go out of business. Do you think this is a feasible argument, and is this why some of the insurance companies are so scared?
I'm not sure how scared they really are. I think they see it could be a problem for them, so they want to get all they can get. I mean, politically, for example, if some people felt that the only possibility would be a public option, then it seems to me politically it would have been wise, even on those terms, to push hard for single payer, and then say, okay, as a compromise, we'll have this public option. But having given up on single payer at the outset, they're not left with much to bargain with. So could this be troublesome for the insurers? Yes, it could. And so who knows where it will lead. They'd like to get rid of it, but I think they feel they can deal with it. Actually, there was a Medicare bill passed for our senior citizens, Medicare, under George Bush, of all people, which provided a drug benefit, but the drug benefit law outlawed, if you will, the negotiation with the drug companies to get lower prices. And so, if under Medicare and under the Medicare drug law, it was not possible to get some negotiation with the pharmaceutical industry, I cannot see. That it would be possible under this program. So it sounds nice, but my estimate is I don't think so.
Okay, well, we just have a few minutes left, but I'd like you to just quickly address, you mentioned that it's been estimated that up to 70%, I believe, of Americans support a single-payer system. Are there any signs that this vast majority of people in the country will be heard, or do you think that this public option is going to go through?
I think right now in the Congress, it is highly unlikely that we will make any breakthrough at this time. I don't know what we'll be left with, but I know it will not be a program remotely approaching what France or Canada has. So I don't think there. As I say, we have the two political parties that are two arms of the same, and until we can get something different, some different political vehicle, I'm afraid we're stuck with what we have. And I think it's worse than that, because the lack of this political vehicle means also that our wars and our empire keep rolling along, even though the people oppose those things. So the lack of this political option has grave consequences for all the people of the world.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. John Walsh, for joining us this week. You provided a really illuminating analysis on the healthcare system. That was John Walsh speaking to us in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you.
It's very, very great to have you on the show. That concludes our program for this week. We will be back with you next week. Same bat channel, same bat time.